AI.org. It's 12 noon. Coming up next, The Gary Null Show.
Live from New York City, it's The Gary Null Show. And now, your host, Gary Null.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Null. Nice to have you with us. A special presentation today. The entire hour will be devoted to projections over the next 12 to 24 months. I'll be joined in discussing what it's going to be like living in America, let's say a year from now or 2 years from now, by Gerald Salante. Now, most of the audience knows Gerald. He is the creator of Trends Research and the Trends Journal, and he has a remarkable proclivity for being correct. He has accurately predicted the different dot-com bubble of 2000. He predicted the peak water, peak oil, peak food. He has challenged the Federal Reserve. He also said that the Federal Reserve would not stop at a $49 billion monthly buyback. Indeed, it went almost immediately up to $80 billion. So he's someone that we should pay attention to. But we're going to do it a little differently this time. During the hour, I'll be bringing in some articles by leading thinkers, leading progressive thinkers from around the world. And I'll read a little bit of the article and ask Gerald to give us his input. Also, two very important clips that we're going to play today. One is about the man whose life was the basis of a brand new film with Leonardo DiCaprio and directed by Martin Scorsese called The Wolf of Wall Street. We were fortunate to film him before anyone else did. And for part of our Poverty Inc., the role of greed in causing poverty and financial inequality in the United States. And I have a small clip of that that I'll play today and then ask Gerald to give his input. Why this clip is so important, and you can view the entire clip on Gary and All YouTube, is because it's the first time I have ever heard an individual who was at the top of the game of Wall Street, bringing in over $100 million a year, who tells us the complete truth. I mean, he bears his soul in this very provocative interview. So we'll hear that. Also, yesterday I began a two-part series with two individuals, George Galloway, the British Member of Parliament, who is extraordinarily outspoken and a populist, and he invited to speak in an evening chamber of parliament one of the most outspoken people in the world, Max Keiser. So Max was giving an idea of what's going to be happening to the currencies and the various financial systems, and he told us about the corruption in the systems. And he was specifically dealing with England. But a larger issue is something that Gerald and I have touched upon before, but he gives us some unique insights. It was called Brown's Bottom, and it referred to the head of the Exchequer, Gordon Brown, who would later become Prime Minister, and why he gave away gold, 60% of all the gold in England, at fire prices. Why? It made no sense until now. So when Gerald Salante on previous programs has stated that the price of gold is being artificially kept down by the Federal Reserve and other central bankers for simple reason because they don't have the gold. And for those of you who have invested in gold certificates, the likelihood is you're not going to get any of that. And if we were to go to the bank today, everyone who bought gold and had it there and said, I'd like to redeem my gold, you're not going to get it. And this is how it happened. This is the genesis of it. So this is really revealing and important new insights. So we're going to go to that area also today. So as you see, we have a lot to cover. I'll also be asking him about America's child soldiers, how the Pentagon's program is to canvass all public high schools for future soldiers, and what that means, and how the Washington Post and Amazon are doing business with the CIA, Norman Solomon. A St. Louis church orders it to stop handing out hot meals to homeless people. Think progress. Get ready for a trade tsunami from Lori Wallach, a public citizen. That's the Trans-Pacific Partnership and these treaties. That the good corporate slave Democrats, those the pimp for this administration and any other demonic process of this White House, you know, no matter what they dress themselves up as, they have sold you out. It's unfortunate the authentic left, the authentic liberal establishment has not railed against them, but they haven't. And that's, you'll see the outcome of that. Also, 700,000 Americans are on a U.S. watch list. Could you be one of them? What happens when you're on the list? You never get off. How do you know you're on the list? You don't, until it's too late, and then try to get off. Martial Law and the Economy, is Homeland Security Preparing for the Next Wall Street Collapse, by Professor Ellen Brown. Very insightful understanding of why did the Pentagon encourage the Department of Homeland Defense to buy 1.6 billion rounds of ammunition. Mind you, this is not for foreign conflict. This is for American soil. Well, someone did the math, and that means that they have enough ammunition now for a 28-year full-time war. Against whom? Why are we allowing this to be spent? It's our money. Oh, I forgot. I see. We forgot that little thing called, if it's for a bureaucracy and you're a Democrat, let it be. Let it rip. Anything you want to spend, as much as you want to spend, we promise you three things. A, we will never hold you accountable. B, will we never audit you. And C, we will never assume that that money is not for the public good. It's always for what? And this is how, as I showed yesterday, $8 trillion of the Pentagon budget alone went missing, has not been accounted for. And we can assume most of it was misspent, spent on special interest groups, corporate insiders, and simply out-and-out theft. But it's our money. Who cares? I care. You care. Now let's go over to my guest, Gerald Celante. Nice to have you with us today, Gerald.
Well, thanks for having me, Gary.
Gerald, let's begin by taking a look at some of these issues, and then we're going to play some excerpts. I want to start with this, because I think it's very important. This is from Edward Lambert, and it's preliminary sign of a coming contraction. Quote, enjoy this Christmas because next year's Christmas will not be as merry. As real gross domestic product nears the effective demand limit, we should see some signs of the economy turning the corner towards a contraction. So do we see any of these signs? Yes. Lots of them. And then it goes in to discuss how, while America was not paying attention, we've really met our match. In other words, we cannot continue to grow because 270 million Americans just don't have the money to buy things that would allow the economy to grow. Industries are going out in the United States, therefore not allowing local communities to have money. So tell us what you see as far as the American economy overall happening in the next 12 to 24 months.
Well, you could see in the Christmas sales, Gary, depending on whose numbers you're looking at, you know, they registered about, you know, a 2.2% increase and compared to last year. And most of it's come from, you know, children's clothing and jewelry, not a lot of luxury items. And when you look at the numbers, you can see why. Incomes increased only 0.2% in November, and that's after dropping 0.1% the month before. So the jobs that have been created, as everyone knows, over the last year, for example, they are mostly temporary jobs, and median household income is an estimated between 8.3 to 8.6% lower than it was since the panic of 08 began. So the growth isn't there. And then you can see what's going on in the markets. And it's the same thing, by the way, globally. And it's really important to look globally. One of the big stories that's not making the news right now is what's going on in China. And that is they have a credit crisis going on. It's very similar to what happened here. China has a cash squeeze. And the central banks are doing exactly what the central banks have done here. And that is every time there's problems, they keep pumping dough into the system. And now you're looking at interest rates skyrocketing over in China. They're trying to keep them down. As a matter of fact, the Chinese government issued a propaganda announcement telling the Chinese press not to report on this and that it was only a temporary setback. So now what you have is the same thing happening in the United States with the tapering going on. The only people that have benefited, everybody knows this, this isn't speculation, the only people that have benefited from all of the quantitative easing and the trillions pumped into the system is the financial sector. Same thing in China, same thing in Japan. So now what's going on in the States? Well, since the tapering started, even at the minimum level of $10 billion a month, look what's happened to the bond yields. All of a sudden now they're over 3%. This is a very simple formula, and anyone could understand it. The higher interest rates go, the quicker the economy collapses. The only reason we have any recovery at all, with what they want to call it, is because of record low interest rates. You know, Gary, I'll tell you what, you could use a new automobile. Don't worry, nothing down. Yeah, you're that kind of guy. Don't worry about it. Nope, no interest. Don't worry about that. Zero down, zero interest, and don't worry about it. Oh, you don't have credit rating? Dial this number, call this number. We're going to find you a dealer in an area near you where you could buy an automobile with no credit rating, no money down, no interest rates. It's one Ponzi scheme after another. Our forecast is they're going to start tapering even more in the middle of January. You're going to see a financial crisis erupting around the world, and we believe there's going to be the financial crisis should hit sometime around the second quarter of 2014.
Okay. I would like for you to now address what we've all been exposed to in the past year, the fact that we can now prove that we have been living in a fascistic police state worse than the Stasi in East Germany, where every single piece of information that is electronically communicated, telephones, cell phones, computers, faxes, has all been captured, analyzed, collected, even people's porn watching habits, all collected, all analyzed. And instead of seeing an outrage, members of Congress, including Dianne Feinstein and other Intelligence Committee members, have given them additional powers to do this. There seems to be, outside of some people within the libertarian movement and some people within the humanistic movement, there's not a lot of protest about this. We're just kind of watching this unfold. Your thoughts? Where's this going to go?
Fascism, and fascism began with four words, too big to fail, the merger of state and corporate powers. You mentioned Feinstein and the others. Look where they get all their money from. They get it from the military and cyber industrial complex. That's all this is, by the way. This has nothing to do with national security, as we saw from the judge's recent rulings. There's been nothing that they've found over the past 11 years since this has been escalating that has prevented any terrorist attacks. It's only business. And in the terms of business, according to the Financial Times, the United States cyber industrial complex, mostly comprised of private contractors, did the grand total of $80 billion last year in business. That's all this is. It's business. It's another element of the military industrial complex. There should be outrage. This isn't even an issue. This is not an issue for discussion. This is against everything that this country was founded upon. The Constitution, the Bill of Rights, everything has been abrogated. And it's not even a legal issue. It's not an issue that should be discussed. Who are these people? Has anyone looked at the photographs of them? This guy Clapper, the head of the the CIA, NSA, wherever he is now. And this guy could be right out of Marvel comic books. The other guy that's the head of Booz Allen Hamilton, McDonald. Wasn't he the head of the NSA under the Clinton administration? You look at one after another. This is not even an issue to be discussed. It should not be going on. Yet the people permit it. And, you know, I keep thinking about this. And why does it keep happening? You know what, as I look at it, it's like people being in abused relationships. And that's all this is to me. As I look at the people, how they bow down and pledge allegiance to their phony presidents, commanders-in-chiefs, senators, congressmen, and other elected officials, they're like being in abused relationships. And they don't want to admit the relationship they're in. And also, it gives them stock to behave immorally as well. And that's what I see going on.
Next up is Lori Wallach from Public Citizen. She has an article entitled, Get Ready for the 2014 Trade Tsunami. Hard work, smart planning, and perseverance made 2013 a year of inspiring fair trade activism. Vibrant grassroots activism and dog DC advocacy resulted in a new level of public and congressional concern about the perils of Fast Track and the Trans-Pacific Partnership. In November, three of every four Democrats and a remarkable number of Republicans publicly stated their opposition to Fast Track trade authority. The extreme procedure is seen as critical by Trans-Pacific Partnership's corporate boosters because it could railroad the Trans-Pacific Partnership through Congress despite growing concerns about many aspects of the PAC. And thanks to civil society pressure in Asia and Latin America, the other Trans-Pacific Partner country governments did not give an in to all the U.S. corporate-inspired demands for medicine monopolies, financial deregulation, and expanded corporate investor tribunals in the Trans-Pacific Partnership. As a result, Obama administration failed to wrap up the Trans-Pacific Partnership negotiations in Singapore this month, missed yet another opportunity, self-imposed deadline for the deal. And of course, as all this audience knows, because we've done multiple programs, the Trans-Pacific Partnership would literally make the Constitution, Bill of Rights, state laws, workers' laws, workers' rules, all of our national and federal guidelines and protections, it would shred them all because this would become sovereign to all that. And yet not one single sentence from hundreds of meetings with hundreds of lobbyists, 600 lobbyists for the corporations was ever made public, as if we shouldn't know what they are doing to us. And now the Public Citizen and a lot of grassroots people are saying, we don't want this treaty, and we sure don't want this president who's lied and betrayed the public and especially his own constituency. We don't want him having the right to fast track it. Your thoughts on the Trans-Pacific Partnership, other treaties, and the likely outcome?
It's a multinational takeover. This is not globalization, it's multinationalization. There's a lot of big news going on now about all these wonderful Chinese and Indian companies that are coming to North and South Carolina and Georgia and other places and opening up plants so that the textile workers could have jobs again. Who could believe this is happening? And by the way, again, the merger of state and corporate powers, the so-called economic development agencies giving all these companies all these tax breaks, loan guarantees, infrastructure repairs, et cetera. You know, it has nothing to do with capitalism. The point being is that when NAFTA began in 1993, for example, we had about 550,000 textile jobs. Now we're down to about 145,000. So the Trans-Pacific deal is, it's a total multinational takeover. Why are these negotiations a secret? This is the United States. Why are they secret? Why can't we see what's going on? The reason we can't see what's going on is that they're turning the United States and Europe and other parts of the world that are getting into this agreement into basically slavelandia. You work for the multinational. You have no say in anything, and it's better than slave labor because you don't even have to, you know, you don't have to take care of the people. You just pay them whatever you want to pay them. They go home, they're on their own, they live, they die, and you don't care. You don't have any responsibility after that. This is one of the most egregious assaults on America and everything it stands for that has come about since NAFTA. It's even worse than NAFTA, if that's even possible to believe, because what it allows the multinationals to do is to override any sovereign laws. And you're already, by the way, seeing that with the tobacco legislation in companies, in countries that are trying to prevent smoking. They're using already World Trade Organization and other trade agreements as use that these override sovereign laws and that they cannot pass laws to stop smoking. So what the smoke in public or things like that. So what this is going to do, it's going to even make it much worse. And my belief is it will be passed. It'll be passed in the United States. It'll be shoved down our throats. And most people won't even know what it is. They don't have any idea what it is now. And the multinationals will get another free ride.
One of the architects of the fascist and influence in the United States is Hillary and Bill Clinton. We saw what Clinton did. We saw what he did to the poor. We saw what he did to unions. We saw how he lied and sold out the public on GATT, NAFTA, and the World Trade Organization. This is the latest. Hillary Clinton tells Wall Street she believes anti-Wall Street rhetoric is foolish. Quote, here we go again. According to a piece in Politico magazine, former Secretary of State and likely 2016 presidential candidate Hillary Clinton had some harsh words related to progressives in her $400,000 speeches for Goldman Sachs and Friends. Clinton decided to use her speaking opportunity before the super rich to attack those criticizing Wall Street and its numerous criminal practices. Quote from Hillary Clinton. Ordinarily, these masters of the universe might have groaned at the idea of a politician taking the microphone, but Clinton offered a message that the collected plutocrats found reassuring. I'm quoting now from Politico. According to accounts offered by several attendees declaring that the banker bashing so popular within political parties was unproductive and indeed foolish. Foolish? As in, if you don't get paid $400,000 for saying it, why criticize Goldman Sachs when you can get paid $400,000 for talking to them the way they like? Quote, striking a soothing note on the global financial crisis, she notes to the audience, in effect, we all got into this mess together, and we're all going to have to work together to get out of it. What the bankers heard her say was what they had hoped from a prospective presidential candidate. Beating up the financial industry isn't going to improve the economy. It needs to stop, meaning stop criticizing banks. Your thoughts on Hillary Clinton?
Let's go back to the Goldman Sachs gang. Oh, yes, it was Robert Rubin, former chairman of Goldman Sachs, that was the Treasury Secretary under Clinton, that put into motion the dismantling of the Glass-Steagall Act that would have prevented the banks from becoming the criminal operations that they are today, that was put in during the Great Depression so this wouldn't happen. And it worked up until then. Oh, yeah, Goldman Sachs, that wasn't that... Henry Paulson, of course, under George Bush, the man that invented Too Big to Fail. Goldman Sachs, right. Didn't Robert Rubin, after they broke up the Glass-Steagall Act and they created wonderful groups like Citigroup and others, he went to work for them, and I believe he estimated about $120 million in consulting fees. Why do you think these people get paid $400,000, $450,000 to talk? Because they did the dirty work that they were supposed to do. The Clinton administration is one of the greatest sellouts that this nation has ever had. Rhetoric? Try the Federal Communications Act. Oh, you remember, Gary, when big business wasn't allowed to control the communications business. Oh, that was deregulated under Bill Clinton. Oh, you love those GMOs, don't you? How about a little bovine growth hormone in your food? Thank Bill Clinton for that. again, one after another, whether it was NAFTA, Glass-Steagall, the Federal Communications Act, the raping of the poor, and he was the one that began the whole big welfare changes, to the poisoning of our planet with food and other atrocities. Why would who is Hillary Clinton? I've had enough of these people for the rest of my life. Why do we have an election coming up and the only names that we hear in a country of 315 million people are Hillary Clinton, Christie over there in New Jersey, Ryan from Wisconsin, and Biden, and what other one is there? There's one other nobody who escaped. Ah, yes, Ted Cruz, right on the scene. What's going on in this country? Can't people see what's going on? We have the incompetence and the inepts destroying our nation right in front of us with levels of arrogance that Marie Antoinette would have loved.
I would think for a moment of the great women that are in the world today that would make exemplary leaders. For example, Vandana Shiva. She simply is so unique, so insightful. She is the female Gandhi. Think of the people who have not compromised. What we see in the political arena, what we see as commentators, what we see as the visible plutocrats, technocrats that are offering up their party's agenda are those that have used their charisma and their intelligence in a way that benefits a unique and select group. What we have not seen, we have not seen the spiritual feminist. We have not seen those who come from a grounded, humanistic, spiritual, and enlightened perspective of which we have in abundance. In fact, if anything, I would say that we have far more women that should be in control of industries, institutions, and governmental agencies than at any time in our history. But they do not get the attention because they're not willing to sell their soul, as the Clintons have, to keep power. Your final thoughts on that?
Well, again, it's men or women. You know, it's not a gender issue. It's the spirituality that you mentioned. And there are positive movements going on, but they're not going to happen under the corrupt systems. People want to call them Democrats or Republicans. How about Bloods or Crips? Does that fit well? I mean, after all, they're murderers. Look at the wonderful wars they start. They kill millions. They steal. They're grand theft. So why call them Republicans or Democrats? Here's the positive things going on. Look what just happened in India. The Common Man's Party, out of nowhere, a populist movement. Look what's going on in Italy with the Pitchfork movement. Look what's going on in Romania and Bulgaria. Look what's going on all over look what's going on in Thailand. There are revolts going on everywhere. It's throw the bums out. We need a new system. And the system has to have the basis upon which this country was founded upon. And I know the atrocities this country committed. I'm not ignorant to them. But there are a lot of great things about this nation. And the Constitution and the Declaration of Independence are great starters. All we have to do is go back to the roots, a restoration to what this country is supposed to be about, rather than the takeover. And that's what's happened.
I appreciate that. From Greg Mitchell, The Sad Decline of 60 Minutes. Continues with the National Security Agency whitewash. Quote, the sad decline and fall of 60 Minutes has been a long time coming, but now it is nearly complete. Just in recent months, the hard hit on Americans with disabilities, the Laura Logan affair, and now the whitewash of the National Security Agency and a bogus slam on Edward Snowden. Hosted by longtime FBI, police, NAC propagandist John Miller. Good night and good luck. And then it goes into the complete transcripts. I watched that with John Miller. I was embarrassed. It was such biased, slanted, non-objective journalism. But then that's what 60 Minutes has become, but that's what so much has become. Your thoughts about the media and its complicit arrangement with those that are heading this fascistic movement in the United States?
Well, you mentioned about earlier on about Bezos buying the Washington Post and Amazon doing over $600 million worth of business with the CIA and bragging that they're going to be doing more business with them. And again, it's a complete takeover. That's why I call them the prostitutes, because that's all they are. So there's no free media in America. It's the alternative media. And, you know, thankfully for the Internet and the alternative availability to make it happen. You know, I used to be on all of these shows at one time. I used to be on CNN about four times a month. What it's denigrated into? It's a joke. Like you were mentioning about watching MSNBC. Everybody's a prostitute for somebody else. So again, going back to the dismantling of the Federal Communications Act under Clinton, where the power is now in just the hands of a few media. So that's what people should expect. We can see it in front of us. And look how, by the way, in the sports arena, how they glorify these wars. I mean, the Eagles at one of the games this past week, oh, this wonderful girl that was a cheerleader, and now, you know, she's a security analyst in Afghanistan and a second tour of duty. Is anybody saying, what are you doing over there? Get home. You know, this country could, things could change, Gary.
Absolutely.
And the biggest, the easiest one is bring home the troops. They did the big news now is they just did another deal in Okinawa. You know, what are we doing over there? This war's been over a long time. So the things could change, but it's not going to come from the media. It has to be the grassroots movement, and you're seeing these grassroots movements happening throughout the world, and it could happen here.
I fully agree. You're listening to Gerald Celente, C-E-L-E-N-T-E. He's speaking with us from Rhinebeck, New York. He is quite simply in a handful of maybe five individuals that I'm aware of who are accurately predicting trends. He founded Trends Research Institute in Kingston, New York, and is the publisher of the Trends Journal that has been in publication since 1980. And we're talking about what he sees for the upcoming year. I remember, I'm going to ask you to give us your insights on two things that are connected. Gerald, I'm out on the road now. This is my fifth year of filming a very important documentary that will be released this summer. It is called Poverty, Inc. The gentleman that we're going to be hearing from in a few moments is a part of that. He fills one little piece of the puzzle about what is the culture, the mindset of people who are working on Wall Street. And better than anyone else, he highlights that. But just as important, it was when I was in Michigan and then in Illinois, I was doing a little tour back in 1988, and one of the places that I was on was PBS out of Detroit. It was the first of about seven or eight visits there for the PBS station. And the volunteers were from a small community called Highland Park. Now, Highland Park, Michigan, was called the City of Trees. It was a very pretty working-class neighborhood. The next day, I went for a ride. I like to start in the center of a city and just keep going in circles. I'll get a driver and just say, drive until you've hit the outer limits of this city. Might take 2 hours, 4 hours, but I want to see. I loved looking at the topography. I like looking at the neighborhoods. It tells me something. Then I talk with people. Well, this was a working-class suburb of Detroit. Now, it was mainly famous because Chrysler cars were manufactured there, and they employed about 7,000 people. At that time, there was about 70,000 people living in that area. Today, there's about 16,000. Today, they can't have enough of a tax base to even pay to keep their water clean and pure. They have no money. They are literally bankrupt. So their idea was to privatize, bring in someone that would run the water utility. And yet it was found out that when they asked someone, and thank goodness someone filmed this, when the head of this privatizing of the water was asked, do you have any experience with this? The guy said, no. Well, then how could you do a better job than the city employees could do at far less cost? Yet they had to have all these guarantees. What would have meant was the average person's water bill could have gone 200 or 300 times a percent higher. And that's what's happening with privatization. So on the one hand, we once had viable communities by the thousands around the United States. Over 35 years, very quietly initially, corporations were downsized and they're shipped off to India, Bangladesh, China, Brazil, Haiti. Then these people had to scramble, frequently not in the same industry, relearning, and not always at the same standard of living. And yet, the government, no one in important positions told us, you know, what is happening. We were in effect, outsourcing America. Now we have the privatizers. They want to see a neoliberal approach where everything is privatized and turn it all over so your local governments don't have to worry about it. We'll take care of it. But at what cost? Talk to us about the dangers of privatization, what it ultimately costs us, and taking away things that are sovereign to a community, our lakes, our parks, our commons, our water, our roads, our ports, our post office, and giving these to people who are politically connected, including the former Speaker of the House, Nancy Pelosi's husband, has been given a no-compete contract to sell off some 100 post offices worth about, I think it was $14 billion. The real estate, these are all paid for. And yet he gets up to a 6% commission. He's going to make over $1 billion for nothing because his wife is the Speaker of the House and it's all completely legal. So everywhere you look, someone is taking from the American purse into their own private domain, and we don't get anything of value in return. Your thoughts on this?
Go back a year ago. There was a big word that was making the news. Oh, they were wonderful people that were going to straighten out all the problems that government caused. The technocrats. Remember them? Oh, the technocrats were going to fix the problems in Greece and Italy and Portugal and Spain and all over the world. And part of the technocrat deal is, one of them, of course, you raise the taxes on people that can't afford it because they're losing money. They cut their pensions and benefits. And when you have another one, we're going to call it privatization. It's a wonderful word. And what all privatization means is selling off valuable public assets at fire sale prices to your buddies. You mentioned about Pelosi's husband. You could take Feinstein's husband and throw him on a bunch of deals too, one after another. And that's what I said, Gary, to keep calling these parties Republicans and Democrats is a total misnomer. They should be called who they are. They're murderers and thieves. They're the Bloods and the Crips. They could care less about anybody else other than fulfilling their own sociopathic and psychopathic needs. So the privatization is going to be forced down everybody's throats as a good way of private industry coming together to fix the problems that government has created, and now they're going to straighten it out. Kind of like that, yeah, kind of like that firm, you know, the one from Canada that Obama brought in on a no-compete clause. The one who the American representative went to school with Michelle at Princeton, the one that built the wonderful, wonderful Obamacare site. Yeah, let's have the private contractors do it. So what they've done is they've destroyed the nation. They've sold out our jobs. They've sold out our future. And now they're selling out our resources. And they will continue to sell them out until the people stand up and say enough, until courage and dignity raises again in the human spirit.
One of the major and contentious issues that have not been honestly addressed is what happens to our tax dollars. I'm not referring to percentages per governmental agency, but to go into the agency, to do a forensic examination, we paid taxes. What do we get for that? I don't believe any responsible, reasonable person would argue that we need to pay taxes. The argument should be what is done with those taxes to ensure our safety, to ensure the safety of the environment, to maintain regulations and standards that protect us, but at the same time, not have an agency that becomes so powerful that it only exists for its own sake, like the Department of Energy, the Department of Defense, and so many other departments. Well, one example that I played yesterday was that the Pentagon now acknowledges that $8 trillion is missing. And then they lied and falsified numbers, have been doing it for a while, that there's tens of billions of dollars in cash, literally pallets of cash, that were unloaded off cargo planes that immediately disappeared into the hands of corrupt people inside Iraq. And so the largest thefts in world history have virtually been swept aside as if they're not significant. And yet at the same time, this year, the United States government spent $1 billion and does so every year on sweatshop buying materials, mainly going against all international trade agreements to buy cheap goods for uniforms, federal employee uniforms, and military uniforms, where the person making the uniform has been exploited. Now, that's per year. And so we have a government that is out of control, bureaucracies that are out of control. So when I decided a year ago to do an in-depth investigation by nonprofit foundations that examine where money is spent, there's not a single governmental agency that is accountable, nor is it doing the job it was supposed to do. And now they only exist for themselves. They're like metastasized tumors that are spreading uncontrollably over the body politic. And yet the average person, they're fully unaware of this. And I would ask, how many people would be concerned if they knew that at least 50% of all the money that all agencies have is not needed, counterproductive, doesn't help them, and therefore the agencies should be reined in? Your thoughts about the massive, bloated, corrupt bureaucracies that are now impacting our lives?
Again, you know, you mentioned that Reuters study where they can't find, what, $8.5 trillion worth of government spending in the Pentagon over the last several years. Look at the new aircraft carrier we just built for $13 billion, the Gerald R. Ford. Oh, yeah, just what we need, a $13 billion aircraft carrier. You want to talk about government waste? I talked about my master's, by the way, Gary, was in public administration, and I was very much involved in the early days of these economic development agencies and saw the waste and the lies and the fraud firsthand. I could cite you study after study showing that not one of these deals ever pays back the taxpayer the promises that they were going to get in terms of jobs and later tax revenues when they give all this generosity to these big corporations to build in so-called depressed areas. And I could give you an example of what's going on right now in Detroit, as they're selling off, of course, all the beautiful artwork and closing down the museum. They're building a Red Wings hockey stadium at the tune of about $500 million, for which public funds are going to go into it, so that they could help a multi-billionaire build more of his toys. So this is going on continually. There is no accountability at all. And as I keep saying, and I will continue to say every time I have a chance anywhere I go, and that is the nation could get back on its feet very simply by ending our foreign entanglements, closing down the several hundred bases around the world, bringing home all our troops, and cutting the defense budget by two-thirds. We need a defense force, not a multinational force. So the money is there, and it's not only being squandered on the defense, and not only the federal government, but in a state house near you. I also began my career, I was the assistant to the secretary of the New York State Senate and up in Albany when I was a young man. So I saw that firsthand as well. And New York State, of course, ranking among one of the most corrupt state governments in the country. So the corruption
is
there.
It is the most corrupt. It's just a cesspool. I don't even like to go to Albany. Gerald, hold your thoughts, because I want to play a little bit and then have final thoughts. I can't go to both now, but I want you to hear the Wolf of Wall Street, because this guy is honest about what everyone else hitting major industries, major media personalities, major corporate entities are never honest about.
what type of person goes to work on Wall Street. I think you'd have to say these are people that are mostly in search of lots of money. And when they start making money, that's when the problems start. This endless pursuit of what they believe is going to fill them up and make them feel good, which is endless supplies of money, but it never does. So they feel this hollowness. They go out and buy things to try to fill them up. They buy Ferraris. They buy $2,000 suits. They go out for super expensive dinners. They rent houses in the Hamptons. Once they have that, then they take a whoo. I still feel empty. What do I do now? So now they look for the next step. They got to make more money and get even, you know, a bigger house in the Hamptons and start flying in private jets. Instant gratification. And you get caught up in this pressure on Wall Street of trying to achieve the next quarterly number, the next monthly gross minimum. So people start making decisions that are just based on making money now. It looked really great when all these big firms on Wall Street were trading these derivatives and these, you know, issuing these credit for default swaps, taking in nothing but money and being perceived as the ultimate masters of the universe while times were good. And meanwhile, everyone was just looking the other way, sacrificing any ethical or moral responsibility in the pursuit of short-term profits. And it unwinds. You see these ethical decisions, this lack of ethics in these decisions, destroy everything and cause a meltdown of biblical proportions. When you sacrifice ethics, you want to backdate a trade or, you know, take a contract and book it to the quarter before to up your numbers. Yeah, it looks good for a while, and in the end, it unravels.
What started in America last year has now spread to every part of the world.
We're down 9% today. The ZDAX over in Frankfurt is down by 9%. The Paris market down by 9%. Austria.
The problem is that in ethics, not just on Wall Street, in any business out there, whether it be in the insurance business, like you saw with AIG, or in GM, where they're, you know, making mistakes, you know, and then bankrupting that company, what happens is a lot of decisions that are ethical sometimes aren't great for short-term profits. And I guess the question is why, what makes it, you know, what, like, listen, look at me. I went down to Wall Street. I come from a great family. My mother was one of the most well-respected attorneys in New York State, the oldest woman to pass the bar. My brother's one of the top healthcare attorneys in the United States, a partner at a big firm. Okay, my dad never broke the law in his life, and his CPA. And then there's me. I ended up going to jail for securities fraud and money laundering. What happened to me, you know, that when I went down to Wall Street, I lost my path? Well, part of it, okay, was bad luck. The people that I met. I met some people that were crooks. They showed me the dark side of Wall Street, the underbelly, and I went with that direction. That's not an excuse, though. That's just sort of a, you know, what you'd call a trigger, okay, catalyst, okay? What happened with me was deep down was my desire for instant gratification. I wanted money now, and there's no better place to get that on Wall Street. No one goes down to Wall Street and loses their soul on day one. I'm sure people like John Thane, who spent $1.2 million on his office furniture while Merrill Lynch was bleeding more red ink than a hemophiliac with a gunshot wound. I don't think he started off that way. He's probably a good guy, very legitimate, but he got completely numb to what is normal in the rest of society. There's a certain sense of entitlement, a sense of power, where you just think that you're above it all. Okay, I'm John Thane, I'm the head of Merrill Lynch, and what the hell's wrong with me spending $1.2 million? But the truth is, John Thane didn't build Merrill Lynch, and the guys that took private jets to Washington, D.C. didn't build General Motors, Ford, and Chrysler. They're high-paid stewards of other people's work. They came in after the fact, stood on the shoulders of geniuses, and then milked it for all they were worth. That's the problem, is the people that are running these corporations and these brokerage firms, they didn't build them. They were built by the Carnegies and the Schwabs and all the people way back in the day. I mean, whatever names are, the J.P. Morgan. You can keep going on and on with that. But these people came in after. Their own money's not at risk. There's no pride of ownership. They have nothing at stake. So that, you know, moral responsibility, you know, it falls by the wayside. There are two types of people on Wall Street now, operators right now. And I think you need to separate out a guy like Bernie Madoff from the rest of the people. There's a class of people like Bernie Madoff who are out and out thieves. Bernie Madoff did not run a legitimate game. He was just simply taking people's money and stealing it. Okay, people would send him money. They thought they were investing in the stock market. Instead, he was just sending bogus confirmations out and using a basic Ponzi scheme where he was paying off new investors with old investors' money. And as long as he could keep raising more and more money, he could show them what they thought were good returns while sucking off enough money to live an extravagantly, you know, an extravagant lifestyle. Please be there. And the only way to avoid those people, okay, is to basically do your due diligence. Okay, and you know, be smart. Don't just give your money to the first person that calls you or anyone that calls you on the phone. Check out people's reputations. And Bernie, you know, listen, in Bernie's case, he had a great reputation. He was a regulator, for Christ's sake. He was the head of NASDAQ for a while, which is a joke. But the telltale signs are there. It was too good to be true. The returns were above what they should have been. If anything on Wall Street seems too good to be true, it is. There's nothing given out for free on Wall Street, except for the people that run the firms. They run the casinos. You are just a gambler in their world. And when you go to the casinos, right, you look at these beautiful buildings. They weren't built by winners. They're built by losers. Okay, you can make money on Wall Street as an investor. If you have a good broker and you're playing for the long term and you're in legitimate stuff, yes, Wall Street is a great place to invest your money. So I don't think that, you know, people overall, you know, when this is a crisis right now, when this is all said and done, I don't believe that the answer is for people to lose faith in the financial system and to never invest with stockbrokers anymore or money managers or hedge funds, whatever people want to do. I think there is a really legitimate element out there on Wall Street that deserves the trust of America and the world for that matter. But the thing with, you know, someone like a Madoff, it's just fraud. Okay, the rest of Wall Street, the problem is that sliver in the firms that's illegitimate that brings the rest of it down. So Bernie Madoff was a crook. What's happening on Wall Street now, which has melted down the economy, has nothing to do with Bernie Madoff. It's a far more dangerous breed of person than Bernie Madoff that's causing these problems. There are always going to be Bernie Madoffs around. There's always going to be people that break the, they're going to just go out there and thieves. They're common thieves, okay? And what I did was not like Bernie Madoff. I actually ran a legitimate firm. And here's what, why I did was so terrible. And my, why it's even worse than what Bernie did. And what people did at Merrill Lynch at Lehman Brothers and at AIG, why it's worse even, is because they had legitimate businesses. And they, within that business, there was a germ of it. There was some percentage of this business which was completely fraudulent. And that's enough on Wall Street to bring down the entire system. In other words, you can't be half pregnant with ethics on Wall Street. Either you're going to operate ethically, you're going to run a legitimate firm, or you're not. You can't say, well, 95%, listen, let me backtrack for a second. If 2 years ago someone said to you, is Merrill Lynch your legitimate firm? Oh, yeah, well, of course, Merrill Lynch is totally legitimate. They're Merrill Lynch. They manage money. They're in business for 100 years, so on and so forth, right? Well, that's true. And 95, maybe 97% of Merrill Lynch was legitimate. However, there was 3% of Merrill Lynch, this sort of growth engine managed by a few people, not all of Merrill Lynch, that would wanted nothing but to make money at all expenses. They didn't care. 10 years ago, the same division, you know, in a different form, bankrupted Orange County. They bankrupted Orange County. That's, people forgot about that, okay, in the 90s. And that kind of slid under the rug because it was just Orange County. It was 8 million people, no big deal, right? It wasn't America, so it kind of slid under the rug. But what you have is this portion within Merrill Lynch where they're just doing insane things, where ethics is non-existent, where greed is everything, okay? And what that does is it poisons the entire company. That's what went wrong with a company like Merrill Lynch or Lehman Brothers. They were legitimate in other ways, but, you know, Dick Fuld couldn't see past his own mastery of the universe and his own just want for, you know, he didn't want to make $100 million. He wanted to make $500 million for himself.
Lehman Brothers is in serious trouble.
Lehman Brothers stock has been plummeting along with confidence in its ability to survive.
I think at a certain point when you cross over to the dark side of the force, you just, like, nothing is taboo anymore. You know, you look at these guys like, you know, at Lehman Brothers, or how about Bear Stearns? When Bear Stearns was crashing and burning, what was Jimmy Cayne doing? He was smoking pot and playing bridge with his friends. You know, how could he justify that? You know, but I don't think he got there overnight. If, like, the Jimmy Cayne that probably went down to Wall Street early on, or the Jimmy Cayne of 30 years before that, would have probably been there with his shirt sleeve rolled up on the trading desk doing anything he could, okay, to try to save things. You know, how did Dick Fuld do what he did? From Lehman Brothers, the same thing. Robert Rubin, look at this. Robert Rubin was the former Treasury Secretary, right? He goes, becomes Treasury Secretary. He lobbies to have the limits eased on derivatives, which allows firms to make, you know, buy these derivatives and leverage them up. He's instrumental in getting these derivatives approved to be traded on Wall Street in a very aggressive way. Okay? Then what does he do? He's no longer Treasury Secretary. He's out of office. He goes down to Wall Street, gets on the board of Citibank, convinces them to plunge headfirst into these derivatives, the ones that he deregulated when he was Treasury Secretary, and he makes $500 million by most accounts, somewhere around $500 million, and he bankrupts what was once the largest bank in the world. He goes from being a politician, changing the law, then going back to Wall Street, you know, with his old cronies. He used to be Goldman Sachs. He goes from Goldman Sachs to the Treasury. Then he eases the laws, so everyone on Wall Street makes a fortune while he's Treasury Secretary. Then he goes back to Wall Street, takes over Citibank, goes on the board, and blows up Citibank and walks away, and he's not indicted yet.
That's only about one third of an interview with the real Wolf of Wall Street. We're up to the end of our program. Gerald Salonte, that is the culture, unfortunately, today in so many major corporations, not just Wall Street banks, where profits are the first and only consideration. Your thoughts of what you see coming in the new year?
Well, again, on the economic front, and then just to wrap it up, too, and let's not forget the LIBOR rate being rigged, you know, the interest rates being rigged, the Forex rates, the currency rates being rigged. This isn't speculation. It's real. And now they're looking into, of course, the gold market being rigged, which we all know that is, too. So the next year, again, the key is interest rates. It's a very simple formula. As interest rates go up, the economy goes down. They're going to do everything they can to keep interest rates low, but once you start seeing the 30-year mortgages go up, breaking over about 4.85%, the real estate market ends, and we're going to be coming into very, very difficult times in the year ahead.
Do you see us getting into social unrest?
Absolutely. And, you know, my saying, when people lose everything and have nothing left to lose, they lose it. And you're looking around the world and people are losing it everywhere. And unfortunately, in the United States, it's almost impossible to protest, because if you do, they're going to beat you up, lock you up, and stop any kind of meaningful protest from happening. So as we see McCain and Murphy, these other senators going to Ukraine and supporting their protesters over there, how ironic when we're not allowed to protest over here. But you're going to see them nonetheless.
And they will not. McCain is such a hypocrite. The American legislators never support American protesters who are out there marching against the national security state, the corruption of our different institutions, and the fact that we have 18 million homeless or hungry children, 1.5 million homeless children. And that doesn't seem to make anyone's radar. Yet we have this perpetual move towards taking away what few rights we have left. Thank you for being out there, Gerald. We look forward to another conversation.
Well, thank you, and Happy New Year.
Gerald Salonte and his publications, The Trends Journal. His website is trendsresearch.com, trendsresearch.com. I'm Gary Nall. Thank you all for listening, and I look forward to sharing more on our next program.